just tuned to yesterday, bringing you programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Welcome to An Hour of Crime. Later, we hear Casey Crime Photographer from 1950. But first, a broadcast of Gangbusters called The Case of the Death Mask Killer, heard on ABC on March 16, 1946.
And now, in cooperation with police and federal law enforcement department throughout the United States, the only national program that brings you authentic police case history. Waterman's Pens and Waterman's Inc. present Gangbusters.
Tonight, the case of the Death Mask Killer, who used an innocent girl to cover his elaborate plans, but who learned that even the spending of 3 copper pennies could change the course of his life.
Waterman's Pens, every one a master writing instrument, and Waterman's Ink, the ink that goes up to 3 times as far as ordinary inks, are proud to bring you Gangbusters, presenting facts in the endless war of the police on the underworld. Facts that show the operation of our law enforcement officials in their work of protecting our citizens. Commissioner Louis J. Valentine, on leave as interviewer of Gangbusters, has now arrived in Tokyo, where he is to serve at the personal request of General Douglas MacArthur. Waterman's expects to bring you his voice by shortwave in the near future. Meanwhile, Gangbusters has asked Dr. Carlton Simon of New York City, internationally known criminologist, to narrate by proxy tonight's case. But now, Dr. Simon, I understand the criminal in tonight's case played a major part in the plot which led to a spectacular escape from Eastern Penitentiary last Easter.
He did indeed, Don Gardner. This killer, Bow Wow Bowers, was cunning, shrewd, and merciless.
His background must be of extreme interest to criminology, Dr. Simon.
It certainly is, Don. For the soundest way to combat crime is to know how the criminal's mind thinks and works. So I'm going to start tonight's case at a summer resort on a large lake in Wayne County, Pennsylvania. After dinner, a young couple was seated on a porch swing, looking out over the lake, which was brightened to silver by a full moon.
Scranton never was like this, Horace.
No? I was never in Scranton.
You'll have to come visit me sometime. You'd love my family.
I guess I would, Peggy, if they're anything like you. Look, baby, you and me, well, we made a lot of progress in 3 weeks.
Yes, Horace.
Well, there's not many women I'd give a second look. There's a long kiss.
Oh, darling.
Yeah?
Do you really have to leave?
I'll be back, Peggy, in a day or so.
Oh, don't go, please.
Believe me, baby, there's nothing I'd like better than staying here with you, but I got to leave as soon as Andy comes downstairs.
Oh, that Andy. Why do you have a man like that working for you?
He's handy to have around. Andy drives the car, carries my samples, knows a lot of people.
I still don't care much for him. He takes you away from me.
But I'll be back, Peggy.
When?
Day after tomorrow. You'll be here?
Well, I should have left for home last week.
You stick around, Peggy. Oh, there's Andy.
Oh.
We're late now. Look, kid, there's nothing for you at home. Wait here for me.
All right, Horace. Hurry back.
So long, baby. Let's go, Andy.
Right. You and that thing.
So what? Hold it. I got a pep on my shoe.
What do you want to get involved with a dame for, Bowers? Ain't we got enough trouble? Every cop in Pennsylvania is not after us.
That's the idea, Andy.
I don't get it.
Just in case, Peggy Foster's going to be our alibi. She's going to be our proof we were right here when the cops say we weren't.
Yeah, you couldn't get her to tell a lie and you know it.
No. Just give me another week or so and she'll jump into the lake if I ask her to.
Yeah.
Sure. Come on.
Okay, if you say so. But I'd just like one look at her face when she finds out you're the hottest guy in the state.
Shut up and hop in the car.
Hey, I thought he wasn't taking us, Craig.
Only in the Wilkes-Barre. We'll grab another car there.
Oh, I get it. A double switch.
Yeah. I got a nice Buick picked out. The owner won't miss for a week. Get going. I want to make the switch and take that nightclub in Easton before midnight.
Attention, all police. Be on watch for two armed bandits in stolen black Buick sedan to leave fleeing north from Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania, on Highway 611. Brutal gunmen identified as ex-convicts Bow Wow Bowers and partner Andreoli. Held up five nightclubs and taverns vicinity Easton during past 48 hours. Blocked all roads. Authority, Captain Hall, Pennsylvania State Police.
You wanted to see me, Captain Hall?
Oh, Trooper Brodsky, sit down. Sit down.
Yes, sir.
Brodsky, this wave of assaults and holdups has got to be stopped.
Well, at least we know who we're looking for.
Yes, but where? The devil only knows what kind of a hideout Bowers is using now.
You haven't got any leads, Captain?
Almost none. Brodsky, I want you to take charge of the hunt.
Just the chance I've been waiting for, Captain.
Now, you'll have to work in plain clothes.
Of course.
Haunt all the taverns and nightclubs in this area. Any scrap of information will help.
I'd give a year's pay to catch him red-handed, Captain.
So would I. You ever handled Bowers before, Brodsky?
Oh, yes, Captain. I questioned him for several hours before he was sent to the penitentiary last time.
Good. Then you'd know Bowers in sight.
I couldn't miss him.
Now be careful. Bowers would probably know you, too.
Don't worry, Captain.
All right, Brodsky. You stay on this assignment until Bowers is put away for keeps.
Hello?
Hello, Peggy. The moon's still out on the lake?
It's you, darling.
Miss me?
Yesterday.
I couldn't make it, Peggy. Business.
When are you coming back?
Maybe tomorrow, maybe next week.
Oh, horror.
Now, look, kid, I got an idea. Why don't you drive down to Wilkes-Barre and meet me?
Well, all right, where?
Well, Boulevard Inn's a nice, quiet place. Suppose you meet me there tomorrow night, about 11.
Boulevard Inn, Wilkes-Barre.
Yeah, I'll see you there about 11 tomorrow night. Now, stand me up.
I won't, darling. Bye.
Bye.
Well, where is this dame, Bowers? She's an hour late already. How are we going to use her for an alibi?
Shut up, will you, Andy? I'm sore enough without you rubbing it in. But stop putting nickels in that jukebox.
Yes, you got to play around with a dame. Why pick on one like that?
Peggy's class, that's why.
Okay, she's class. How long do you think she'd stick around if she knew who you were?
She'd stick.
Don't make me laugh, Bowers. You still got that moon in your eyes from the summer resort.
Shut up. I know what I'm doing.
Yeah. You sure you told her Boulevard Inn?
That's the name of this joint, ain't it? Boulevard Inn? That's what I told her.
Look, Powers, it's risky enough coming to this joint, much less waiting around for an hour. Where is this thing?
Something could have happened. Peggy don't show up in 5 minutes, I'm gonna phone her.
Trooper Brodsky, Captain.
Oh, anything new on Bowers, Brodsky?
I've been to a lot of clubs and taverns, didn't learn much.
I got a report a little while ago, Brodsky. Two nightclubs held up early tonight, just across the New Jersey line.
Bowers?
Looks like his work. I'll take your report over the phone, Brodsky.
Well, it's too dark to read my notes in this booth, Captain. Besides, there's a guy outside pacing up and down like a tiger waiting to use the phone. Must be expecting twins or something.
Well, where are you, Brodsky, in case I want to reach you?
Please call the Boulevard Inn in Wilkes-Barre.
Boulevard Inn and Wilkes-Barre. Right, okay. Let the other fella have the phone. Maybe it's triplets.
Bye, Captain. Okay, mister, the phone's all yours.
It's about time.
Bowers. Copper. Now, you don't copper.
Quiet, copper.
All right. The next guy that moves gets the same treatment. Line up over there. This is a stick-up.
Every police officer in northeastern Pennsylvania joined in the hunt for the killers of Trooper John Brodsky. But police were stymied, Don, until they saw a young boy spend 3 cents in Philadelphia.
Dr. Simon, just how did the Pennsylvania State Police go about their search for the murderer of Trooper Brodsky?
Well, Don, Captain Hall took charge of the investigation at the Wilkes-Barre headquarters of the state police. About an hour after the murder, Sergeant Haynes reported to Captain Hall on one phase of the investigation.
I've got the young lady outside, Captain.
What's her name, Sergeant?
Peggy Foster, sir. I checked on her. Comes from good people in Stratton.
Peggy Foster, huh? Does she know why she's here?
Not yet, sir.
All right, bring her in.
Yes, sir.
You tell me why I'm here. This is ridiculous. I didn't even see the shooting.
Captain Hall, this is Miss Peggy Foster.
How do you do?
Captain, would you mind explaining all this to me?
Would you sit down, Miss Foster?
All right, but I still don't see
Sit down, please, won't you? Now, would you explain exactly what you were doing at the Boulevard Inn tonight?
Of course I'll explain. I'm a guest at a summer resort in Wayne County. I was to meet another guest, Mr. Burns, Mr. Horace Burns, at the Boulevard Inn at 11 o'clock.
But you didn't arrive until after midnight, 5 minutes after the shooting.
I had a flat tire on the way. I had to change it myself. Look at my clothes.
When you came into the tavern and learned there was a murder, you became hysterical.
When I didn't see Mr. Burns, the thought suddenly struck me that he was the one who'd been killed.
You didn't know it was Trooper Brusky?
Somebody finally told me.
Then you never did see this Mr. Burns at the tavern?
No, sir. I don't know what could have happened to him.
Miss Foster, would you take a look at this photograph?
Certainly.
Is that Mr. Burns?
Yes, that's Horace. But this number, why the number?
What do you think?
He's no criminal.
He killed Trooper Brusky.
No.
He's wanted for 24 recent holdups.
He couldn't, not Horace.
Miss Foster, it's true.
No, no.
Now look, please, Miss Foster, please try to help us.
All right, Captain Hall, I'll try.
Your Mr. Burns is really Horace Bowers. He's a killer.
There must be a mistake. He was so nice to me. So nice.
Well, Miss Foster, I'm afraid he wasn't sincere. He was using you for an alibi.
Oh, no.
Now, in the weeks that Bowers saw you, he may have unconsciously told you many things. Little things that may help us find him. Now, we'd like to start asking you questions. Little questions.
All right, Captain.
Now, Miss Foster, when did you first meet Bowers?
The day I registered at the lake, 3 weeks ago.
How was he dressed?
Very smartly. He always liked to dress well.
Did you see his luggage? How many suitcases was he carrying?
I don't remember that.
What else did Bowers have to drink?
Nothing, only two highballs.
What time did he leave the next day?
10. I think it was 10.
What was he wearing?
Sport jacket, I think.
Did he leave Andreoli behind when he drove away that day?
No, sir. I think Andreoli was with...
He's always commenting about the noises trains make near his home, you say.
Yes, yes, always.
In Philadelphia?
Yes, Philadelphia.
Is this North Philadelphia?
Yes, 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 North Philadelphia.
And Bowers said he was heading for Philadelphia as soon as he left this part of the country.
Yes.
And the last time you heard from Bowers was when he called you tonight.
That was the last time, yes.
Well, I think that's all for now. And we're very much obliged, Miss Foster.
Thank goodness.
Thank you very much, Miss Foster. Sorry we had to question you so long. You can go now and get some rest. Sergeant and I have some work.
All right, Captain Hall. Good night.
Well, Captain, what's our first move?
Well, from what the girl said, Bowers apparently sees a lot of Philadelphia.
Bowers knows we're hotter after him than ever, Captain. He'll have a good hideout, and he won't show his face outside.
Well, it won't be easy. But did the girl's answers convey any particular quirks to you about Bowers' personality?
He seems pretty vain.
And curious.
Right. So?
He'll be especially curious about the progress of our investigation into Trooper Brusky's murder.
You mean he'll read the newspapers?
Exactly. And the most detailed counts will be carried in the Wilkes-Barre papers. And Bowers will want to see them most of all.
I think you've got it, Captain. I'll put an immediate cover on every stand in Philadelphia that handles out-of-town newspapers.
Captain Hall speaking.
Sergeant Haynes, Captain. I think we've located Bowers.
Good.
An hour ago, a young boy bought yesterday's Wilkes-Barre paper at the main newsstand in North Philadelphia.
The railroad station?
Yes, sir. The boy's never been near Wilkes-Barre. He was buying the paper for someone else. From the description, yes. He's at the Palm Manor Apartments. Two men are covering the place now.
Get set for a raid immediately, Sergeant. We'll see if we can put a muzzle on this powwow, Bowers.
The men posted on all street corners, Sergeant.
Got the block surrounded, Captain.
Good. On a night like this, Bowers might slip out through the storm.
This is the house, Captain.
Come on. The door's open.
The apartment at the end of the hall.
We may run into gunfire and I'll be ready for anything.
Who is it?
The janitor. The water's leaking down into the basement from your apartment.
Just a second.
Get set to move fast now. Guns out.
Yes, sir.
All right, Bowers, get your hands up.
Watch this.
Don't move, Andreoli.
Cops!
Let me go, you dumb.
Come along, you two. You're wanted for murder.
Bowers and Andreoli were tried promptly for the murder of State Trooper Brosky, Don, and both received life sentences in Eastern State Penitentiary, Philadelphia. In prison, Bowers was assigned to the corner cell of the 10th cell block. He became sullen and moody. At night, when the other convicts were asleep, Bowers paced his cell, brooding and thinking.
Hey, Bowers, for Pete's sake, will you stop that walking up and down? How can other guys sleep?
Ah, shut up.
You act like you was going stir crazy.
I'm getting out of this, Ken.
Who's going to boost you over the wall? The warden?
I ain't going over the wall.
Oh, no?
No, under it.
What, huh?
Yeah, a tunnel.
Oh, you're nuts. The guards would spot a tunnel in no time.
You gotta have camouflage. I got it all worked out. Any con can get permission to build a bookcase in his cell, right?
And the shelf. So what?
So we'll build our bookcase. Then all we need is some plaster and some water. That's for the rest of the camouflage.
Now I know you're not.
No, I've been reading a magazine. There was a picture of it. A picture of a death mask.
A death mask? You mean one of them plaster casts that they make of your face and your head?
Yeah. We build a tunnel right from this cell here. The bookcase will cover up the tunnel so nobody can see it. The death masks and some stuff bunched up under the covers will make the guards think it's us sleeping while we're really digging the tunnel.
You forget one little thing, Bowers.
What?
The dirt. What do we do with the dirt from the tunnel?
Easy. Lots of times during the day, all the cells are open and us cons can come and go. We'll get a dozen guys in on this. We give them the dirt to carry out in their hats, their pockets, paper bags, anything. They dump it around the grounds. Us birds will be flying out of this cage before you know it. Okay, guard's gone. Get out of your bed.
Yeah, Bowers.
Help me move this bookcase.
All right. Easy now. Yeah.
Okay. Crawl into the tunnel. I'll fix the bookcase back in place and arrange the death masks.
The way things are going, Bowers, we ought to break through with another couple of nights' work.
Cut the talk and crawl in there before the guard comes back. Hurry up.
Yeah. Okay.
Come in. Yes, guard?
Some other guards and myself just noticed something this evening in the grounds around the prison buildings that looks rather suspicious.
Yes?
There's some spots in the yard where it looks like fresh earth has been stamped into the ground.
Fresh earth, eh?
Yeah.
You mean only one thing. Convicts digging a tunnel somewhere and trying to dispose of the dirt they take out. Order an immediate search. The cell blocks in every building in the prison.
I don't care who says so. There can't be any tunnel being dug from this part of the prison.
Just the same, we're going to check and recheck every hour right through the night. Okay, flash your light into this cell.
Nah, both convicts sound asleep.
We'll try the next.
Okay here.
Whose cell is this?
Powwow Powers.
Flash your light.
Sound asleep. We move back along the next row?
Yeah. Okay, that's good. Wait a minute. Flash your light inside the cell again.
What's the matter? Both those kinds are asleep?
Yes, but just watch those bodies.
They're not breathing.
Right. Open the cell door. Careful now.
Oh,
Pull the covers off this cot.
It's empty. Only blankets.
And a plaster cast, a death mask.
Look there, under the bookcase.
A tunnel.
Yeah.
Get out an alarm. I'll watch here. They aren't still in the tunnel. They didn't get very far.
They found out awful quick, Bowers.
Well, lucky it's still dark. Keep running.
We need a car. Quick.
Run, run. We'll get a car.
Hey, look. A milk truck.
Slide them down.
Hey, stop, will you? Stop. Hold it. Wait a minute. Hold that truck. Stop.
Come on.
Some other cops stopped me back there. You guys ain't cops.
How'd you guess it, brother? Now, get out of the truck. Try any funny stuff and you'll get this knife in the throat.
Yes, sir.
Quick.
Yes, sir.
That'll keep the driver quiet. All right, guys, climb aboard.
All right,
come on.
Bring the driver, Bowers. He'll squeal and cops will spot this milk truck a mile away.
We're ditching the next car we see. Yeah,
there's a car up ahead.
Good, after it.
Bowers.
What?
The cops. Behind us.
Give it the gas.
Right. We ain't got a chance, Bowers.
Faster, faster.
Yeah, I got it down to the floor.
Take the next corner. Take it.
Watch out.
Right.
Yeah, hold it.
Bowers, the cops.
You ain't taking me.
Come out of there. Watch him, he's got a knife.
I killed one cop, I'll show you. I'll get...
Now the rest of you come out.
Okay, get my hands up.
Sergeant,
yeah.
Get an ambulance for Bowers. The rest of you line up against the wall. One move and you get the same thing.
Bowers recovered from his wound, Don, and he and the other men who participated in that break last April the 3rd are back in Eastern State Penitentiary.
Well, that certainly was quick work on the part of the Pennsylvania police, Dr. Simon. And I can see what you mean by the necessity of knowing how the criminal mind thinks and acts in combating crime. Thank you for a fine case, Dr. Simon. Now, Gangbusters Nationwide Clues, broadcast every week as a public service to assist American police in their war against the underworld.
Wanted by Federal Bureau of Investigation in connection armed bank robbery and murder, state of Oklahoma. Jack C. Purdom, P-U-R-D-O-M. 30 years of age, 5 feet 9 inches, 145 pounds. Dark hair, left forefinger missing. Left forefinger missing. Warning, Purdom is heavily armed. Attention, citizens Southwest, be on lookout for escaped murderer, Missouri State Penitentiary, Jess Hedger, age 40, 5 feet 5 inches, 145 pounds, red hair, brown eyes, large red birthmark center of forehead. Red marks on back of neck. Large red birthmark center of forehead. Red marks on back of neck. Watch for Jess Hedger, escaped murderer. Warning, citizens of the states. Be on alert for Jerry Jackson. Wanted on charge of fleeing Mississippi to avoid prosecution, murder. Jackson's description, Negro, about 43, 5 feet 9 inches, 155 pounds, black hair, maroon eyes, very dark complexion, large scar across forehead, cut scar both arms, uses profanity constantly. Jerry Jackson, sought on murder charge.
These are the clues on the most urgently sought persons in the United States tonight, March 16th, 1946. If you have any information concerning these clues, notify your local police, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, or Gangbusters at once.
Next week, the case of New York's West Side Syndicate, whose imagination and cunning led them to case Uncle Sam himself for $4 million in cash, but who failed to calculate how a paper cutter could frustrate their triumph.
Listen next week, same time, same station, to this authentic case of the West Side Syndicate on Gangbusters.
Gangbusters on Tuned to Yesterday, an ABC episode from the 16th of March, 1946. You're listening to An Hour of Crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up next, a broadcast of KC Crime Photographer, directed by John Dietz, whose other directing credits would include broadcasts of Cabin B-13, Broadway Is My Beat, Suspense, all for CBS, and one of his earliest credited roles on the network was as a sound engineer for, probably not arguably, the most famous broadcast CBS ever aired, and that was The War of the Worlds on October 30th, 1938. That was directed by Orson Welles. Now, John Dietz didn't perform the sound effects that listeners heard, but he did operate the controls, so all of the voice and the sound effects that were performed came across in an even and very believable way. This next episode, he directed of KC Crime Photographer called The Upholsterer, heard on CBS on November 16, 1950.
Good evening. This is Ken Roberts inviting you to listen to another adventure of KC Crime Photographer, ace cameraman who covers the crime news of a great city. Our adventure for tonight, The Upholsterer. A gloomy street of small, grimy-looking shops, all of which are now closed and dark. In front of one of them...
Goldblatt! Goldblatt! This is the Perucci. Is everything all right with you? Goldblatt! Is that your business? And what is a small boy like you, Joey, doing out so late?
Late? It's only 10:30. Anyway, the old lady ain't home from work yet.
Joey, maybe you should go find for me a policeman.
You want a cop?
I think so.
What for?
Because, policeman is a cop.
That's Carmody, the big flatfoot.
Officer Carmody! Officer!
Yeah?
Come here. Come here quick, please.
Something wrong, Perucci?
I don't know. A couple of minutes ago, for comedy, I hear what sounds like gunshots.
Gunshots, huh?
Gee.
Where'd you hear them?
I was just going to bed behind my shop next door. Suddenly, from other side of my wall, from Goldblatt's place, I hear boom, boom. Then I hear what sounds like something heavy falling to the floor.
Door's locked tight.
I call him. He don't answer.
Hey, maybe the old guy shot himself, Carmen. Or maybe it's the murder. Hey, kick the glass out of the door, Carmody.
Pipe down, kid. Perucci, isn't there a window at the rear of Goldblatt's store in the room where he sleeps?
See, but he's got iron bars on it, so nobody can get in.
You'll have to kick the glass out, Carmody.
I hate to disappoint your destruction-loving little soul, kid, but I'm not going to do any expensive glass smashing.
Then how are you going to get in?
Well, there's a transom above the door here, just big enough for a runt like you to climb through.
Me?
Goldblatt that keeps that transom nailed the shut, he told me.
Yeah, we'll see. I'll boost you up, kid, and you try it.
Okay. Give me the lift.
All right. Here you go.
Tight, all right. Can't move it a bit.
Well, I guess we'll have to do some glass smashing.
Well.
But it'll be cheaper to bust that transom than the door. Here, take my nightstick, kid.
You gonna let me smash it?
I can't reach it, and you can from my shoulders. All right, now I want you to climb through. But knock out all the glass so you won't get hurt.
Okay. I won't hurt myself. I'll call them now.
All I want you to do is drop down and unlock the door.
Hey, flash your lights to the door back, Tom, so there won't be
any
dark.
Okay.
Joey, I see a big chair lying on its side just inside the door. Don't skin your legs on her when you drop.
I'll keep an eye on that chair, Poochie. All set to go. Made it swell.
Now, you have to move that chair out of the way so you can get at the locks.
I'm doing it. Now. Turn the lock.
The door don't open. Nothing. The door still don't open.
Don't?
You must have returned one of the two locks. You'd already unlatched instead of getting the third one you missed.
I'll get them all this time. Let's hold the door, Tommy. Let me open the door when I can.
Okay, but hurry. This guy Goldblatt would have to have his door triple locked.
Goldblatt is always afraid he's going to be robbed.
I got it, Condy. The door's open.
Well, it's about time. Now I'll have a look behind that partition.
Me too.
Go to Blatt's workroom at the back of that door.
At least this partition door wasn't locked. Here's a light switch. Now we'll see.
Well, I don't see anything look wrong.
Neither do I, and I didn't expect to. You imagined those gunshots, Perucci.
Hey, look here behind the bus of smoke.
What? Oh, it's a Goldblatt.
Officer Comedy. Is he dead?
Guy has two bullet holes through his chest. He's dead, all right.
Like the guys in the movie.
Perucci, close the front door. The killer's still in this shop. He's not leaving. Lock that door.
See, I lock him. Maybe the killer shoots to me.
No, he won't. I'm keeping my eyes open, my gun ready. Not many places here to hide. Yeah.
Nobody under this bed, Carmody.
No, nobody in this closet either. Now, you duck under that bed and stay there, punk, if there's any shooting.
I ain't afraid.
Do as I tell you. Nobody back with this pile of furniture. Nobody hiding anywhere. The killer ain't here.
I locked the front door again.
Okay, Perucci. Well, let me have a look at this rear window. Yeah, closed and locked from inside, and there's heavy bars on it, just like you said.
Nobody could get through by that door in the front.
Well, there's no other way into this place or out of it. And since nobody but us are here now, it's plain the poor Goldblatt committed suicide.
There's no cap beside him, Carmody.
Oh, a gun probably fell into the sofa, kid. Here, I'll push it out of the way.
No gun there, copper.
Oh.
I see no gun anyplace.
Neither do I. Must be under the body. I'll lift it up a little.
Still no gas.
No. No gas.
Like I said in the first place. Shot is murder.
Yes, but if the killer got out that front door and locked it behind him before we busted in here, how could he have wedged that big chair back of the door after he was outside?
And nobody could get out of that locked window in the back.
Hey, this is a mystery, ain't it?
Yes, and too deep a one for me. Thank the Lord, I'm just a plain uniformed cop. I'm using this phone to call the station house. Let him turn the detectives loose on this one.
The homicide dicks weren't able to find any gun in that upholsterer's joint, huh, Casey?
No, Ethelbert. They practically tore the place apart looking for one.
But when the medical examiner got there, he said Goldblatt couldn't have committed suicide anyway.
Well, if the guy was murdered, how did the killer get out of the place?
Well, Captain Logan and his men are having a sweet time trying to figure that.
Yeah, they're going nuts. Miss Williams and I just came from headquarters where we talked with Logan and also the kid and the shoemaker and the cop who found the body.
They all tell a straight story?
Well, it sounded straight to me, yeah.
This has all the earmarks of a very baffling mystery. You and Miss Williams ain't been to the scene of the crime yet, huh?
No, we weren't working when it was reported last time.
But we're assigned to it now. Let's go to the Goldblatt shop and have a look-see, Casey.
Okay, Annie. Yeah, Logan said he'd be down there about now. Maybe I can help the poor guy crack the case, huh?
How you hate yourself.
I? Annie, how can anyone have anything but affection for a charming character like me?
Hello, Captain.
Hi, Logan.
Oh, so you two are here.
Mm-hmm. So, this is the scene of the impossible Goldblatt murder.
Wait till you size up the joint, wise guy.
Oh. Three good solid locks on this door.
And the door was locked tight by at least one of these locks when the cop and that kid and Ferrucci tried to get in. But skip the locks and answer this one. After the killer shot the old man and was making his getaway, how did he manage to leave a chair lying against the door inside?
Which is the chair?
Here, this big old high bag. Someone had left it here for Goldblatt to recover.
Well, the kid and the cop and Ferrucci all agree this chair lay inside against the door, which opens inward.
Yeah, on its side. They think it was about in this position. Now, it had to be placed this way by somebody inside. It couldn't have been so placed by anybody outside.
Well, it may have fallen in that position after the door was closed.
Miss Williams, a big solid chair like this doesn't just fall. It has to be wrestled around. Besides, the neighbors say Goldblatt always put a heavy piece of furniture against this door when he closed up for the night. The old guy had a constant fear of being robbed.
Well, he was shot through the heart twice. Goldblatt couldn't have put the chair there after the killer left.
I know.
Dick's from the precinct station got here before your guys did last night. I suppose they moved a lot of stuff in the joint.
Yeah, to make sure the killer wasn't hiding here. Not the only thing they didn't shove around was this sewing machine because it was bolted to the floor.
Let me see where they found the body.
Come on. It was here in his workroom, behind that old sofa.
Have you learned a possible motive for the murder, Captain Logan?
No. Goldblatt had no enemies that anyone knows about. But he was so afraid of being robbed, a lot of people in this neighborhood figured he had a lot of dough stuck away here, so someone may have come here last night to get that dough, only they didn't get it, and apparently never even looked for it.
Yeah, we were told the precinct dicks found over $100 in Goldblatt's pocket and about $4,000 hidden in his mattress.
Well, those are the first places a thief would look for money.
Sure. Casey, see if you can figure it out.
Huh? Me? Oh, I'm just a newspaper mug, pal. You're the big chief of the homicide department.
Well, I'll soon be back at pavement pounding if I get many more cases like this and that Casimir killing.
Haven't gotten anywhere with that either?
No, but I got a chance there. Whoever bumped off Charles Casimir for the $80,000 got some very hot money. That $80,000 was in $100 bills Casimir had just gotten to the bank, and the bank had made a list of the serial numbers, which we've circulated all over the country. Now, when the murderer starts to pass that bill...
Oh, wait a minute, though. He'll lay low for quite a while before he does that. He's even smart.
And he'll try to pass him eventually, and we'll get him. I wish I had a string like that on Goldblatt's killer. Say, Casey, you're a lucky guy, and sometimes you get hunches that don't turn out too badly.
Huh?
And now that you got the lowdown on this thing, you got any ideas?
Well, now, what are you paying for ideas these days, pal?
You going commercial on me?
Well, why not? When you're in a tight spot like this, a little first-class assistant from a qualified expert should be worth, Well, I'll tell you what. The next time a juicy murder is committed, you could let Ann and me in for an exclusive story and pictures.
You know I never show that kind of favoritism.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe the little idea I have isn't worth it anyway.
You got an idea?
No, it's just a small one. It was really not worthy of my genius.
Nuts to you. Get out of here and let me think.
Come on, Annie. See you later, pal.
I'm afraid so.
Hey, Logan, all the furniture in this workroom is stuff that Goldblatt had here for repairs.
Naturally, huh? Repairing and upholstering furniture was the guy's business.
I guess this is a chair he was getting ready to recover.
What else? The old cover's been taken off.
Taken off neatly, too. Lying here on the floor. Cut carefully around the seams. It wasn't hacked.
So what?
Now, this overstuffed chair next to it with a shabby old cover still on. Look at that. There's a couple of big cuts in the back. They're away from the seams. As though it had been slashed. It's interesting.
I don't see why.
Huh? Well, skip it then.
Say, Casey...
You still don't want to buy any ideas or hunches, pal.
If you're serious, I never give reporters or photographers of one paper preference over those of another paper.
Okay, tough guy. Well, I can't give a cop preference over my paper. So long,
you
pal.
Can go to... So long, Miss Williams.
Well, I apologize for this mug, Captain Logan. Goodbye.
Logan's sore at me again, Ann.
You have no right to rib him when he's in a spot like this. And I know you haven't even the germ of an idea that might break this case.
Annie, I not only have an idea now, but I've got a hunch.
Casey.
Wait a minute. Let me write down something quick before I forget it. There we are.
Kay. Mm-hmm. Come on now, let's get in the car. We're going places. Not very far, Annie.
Oh, will you please tell me?
Okay, okay. All right, now. Here's the idea that Logan wouldn't buy. Giving it to him for free if he hadn't been so bullheaded. As it is, we'll prove it ourselves before he gets it.
Well, what is the idea?
Look, Goldblatt's neighbor, Perucci, he says that after he heard shots last night, he heard something heavy fall in Goldblatt's shop.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody, including myself, figured he heard Goldblatt fall. And apparently that's what Logan still figures. But, Annie, Goldblatt's body was found a good 20 feet away from Perucci's wall and directly behind a big overstuffed sofa. Now, Perucci didn't hear a body drop. He heard the crash of that heavy chair that fell behind that door as the killer ran out of the door and slammed it behind him.
Well, Logan said that the chair couldn't have fallen, and I think he's right.
It couldn't have fallen if it were resting solidly on its four legs, but suppose it was piled on top of another chair upside down. There isn't much floor space in Goldblatt's joint. He must have had to pile stuff up so he'd have room to work.
Mm-hmm. And if that chair was piled on top of another, it might have toppled easily. And the vibration of a door slam would dislodge it.
That's right. Precinct men had moved almost everything by the time that Logan arrived. He didn't see furniture in piles, and he doesn't always use his imagination either. And the killer didn't waste precious time locking that door, either.
The Perucci and the policeman couldn't open
it. Because the chair fell between the door and that sewing machine that's bolted to the floor. It formed a solid wedge there until the kid moved it. And then, when he thought he was unlocking the door, he was really locking it.
Okay, I'll buy that idea.
All right.
Now, where are we going?
To an address I wrote down a minute ago. It's on a work tag attached to a chair in Goldblatt's workroom. Annie, we're going to find out why there were several big knife cuts in the back of that chair. Yeah, there's the address, Annie. It's across the street there.
Furnished room to let sign in the window.
Yeah, rooming house.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be the landlady who sent that chair to Goldblatt for recovery.
Now, what's the full extent of your hunch about that chair, Casey?
It tells me to get acquainted with the Mrs. Potter whose name was on it. And I hope that she'll give me some information. Now, look, Annie, you wait right here in the car.
I will not. If there's information to get that may make news, I'm going to be where it's got
me. Annie, look, I'm not going to, as a newspaper guy, I'm going to let on I want to rent a room, see, and try to get her talking.
Well, both of us can be renting a room.
But together?
I've heard such things have been done. We'll pose as husband and wife.
Oh, well, that's something that hasn't been done yet by us.
Well, it's being done now.
Huh?
For very impersonal reasons. Come on.
Oh, well, okay. Hope I can act like your husband.
Well, you'll never learn any younger. Maybe you'll never learn, period.
What?
Nothing. Well, you must have some sort of a plan, so you do the talking and I'll just stand by.
Yeah, that'll be best. Okay, here goes the doorbell. Better begin to look wifely, huh?
Don't worry about me.
Someone's coming. Now remember, let me do the talking.
Yeah, okay.
Good afternoon.
Howdy, Bill. We're looking for a room and saw your sign.
Oh, won't you and your husband come in?
Thank you.
I have a very nice double room on this floor that's just been vacated. Do you mind the lower floor?
Not at all.
Well, then come this way. Oh, what's your name?
Mr. Casey.
And Mrs. Casey.
It's a pleasure to know you. I'm Mrs. Potter.
Well, it's nice to know you, Mrs. Potter.
Yeah.
Well, now, let's see the room.
Hmm? One of my best. Was our back parlor when my husband was alive, but since I had to take in paying guests...
Yes. Do you like it, Casey?
You call your husband by his last name, Mrs. Casey?
the habit she got into before we were married.
It's a little unusual.
Yes, well, I have a most unusual wife, Mrs. Potter. one thing, she lets me do all the talking while she just stands by.
Hmm. I can see she's just a shy little thing.
Shy.
Shut up.
Suppose you try it. Well, this is a comfortable-looking armchair. New, Mrs. Potter, or is this reupholstered.
Oh, reupholstered? And by that poor man who was murdered last night.
What? Murdered?
Oh, there's a big piece about it in the morning paper. A little old man named Goldblatt.
Why, we heard about that, Annie.
Yes, we did hear about it, Kate, darling.
Huh?
Oh, they say it's quite a mystery, but it's given me a personal worry. I let him take one of my chairs to his shop only yesterday morning.
Yesterday morning?
Yes. And now, with policemen all over his place, heaven only knows when I'll be able to get it back and in what condition.
Well, the cops take pretty good care of things like that. I believe they do. I hope you made note of the condition the chair was in when Goldblatt took it to his shop yesterday morning. Well, I mean, were there any tears or cuts in it?
Oh, no. It was just terribly shabby and needed new covering. But my, my, my. Sending that chair out taught me something I'd never suspected.
Oh, what was that, Mrs. Potter?
Well, it's been in the room of one of my oldest lodgers, a gentleman who lived upstairs in the second floor flat, for over 5 years, and I've always considered him one of the mildest men alive.
That's right.
But he flew into the most awful temper when he came home from work last night and found out that I'd sent that chair to the upholsterer.
Oh, he did?
Oh, but you're not interested in such gossip, of course.
But
do you like this room? I usually get 20 a week for it, but well, by the month, I might make it a little cheaper.
Oh, $20, huh? Well, have you any vacancies on the second floor, Mrs. Potter?
Yes, I have an empty across the hall from the gentleman I just mentioned.
Oh, you have?
Oh, but I doubt if you'll like it.
Well, could we see it?
Of course. This way. No. A much smaller room than the one I just showed you.
Oh, I won't mind that.
Oh, but maybe Mrs. Casey will.
Oh, no, no. I'm easy to please.
Yes.
Mind the stairs there. They're a little steep.
The gentleman who didn't want his chair recovered, is he in his room now?
No, he's never in this early. He's at business every day till 6 o'clock.
Oh,
but my, it's nearly that now.
What business is he in?
Oh, he's a bookkeeper.
Oh?
In the offices of the Charles Casimir Company.
Charles Casimir?
Poor Mr. Casimir was robbed and murdered only a short time ago. Dear, 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 there's so much crime these days. Well, here's the room.
Oh, it's fine.
It's swell.
We'll take it.
We have more than looked into it.
Oh, we've seen enough.
That's exactly what we want.
What's the rent?
Why, $15 a week.
Okay. Here we are. It's a week in advance.
Oh, thank you. When you move in?
Well, we're in now.
You haven't any baggage.
Well, it's outside in our car.
We'll bring it in later.
Later?
Now, I know you have a lot to do, Mrs. Potter. It's nearly dinner time, so why don't you run along downstairs and don't bother about us one little bit. See you later, Mrs. Potter.
Oh, but I
see you later, Mrs. Potter.
Well, this is a little irregular, but you look like such nice young people. Goodbye.
Did you get it, Annie?
Of course I got it. The man across the hall had something hidden in that chair, and when he learned it had been taken to an upholsterer who'd tear it apart...
He went to Goldblatt's. He slashed the back of that chair, took out what he'd hidden in it, and killed Goldblatt so he couldn't tell what he'd seen.
And Mrs. Potter said that the man worked in Charles Casimir's office. Maybe it was the stolen money that was hidden in that chair.
Yeah. Come on. The coast is clear.
Yeah. We haven't much time. It's 6:15.
15 minutes is plenty if we work fast.
Yeah. Oh, the door is locked.
Naturally. These bevel spring locks have never kept me out of a place I wanted to get into. Not when there's enough space between the door and the frame to put this little gadget in this carry.
Yeah.
Hey, that did it. Come on, quick, so I can close the door again.
Now what do we do?
Listen, Annie. If this guy killed Goldblatt last night in order to get back the money hidden in that chair, he's had to hide it again. I tend to when he's hidden it in here a second time.
Yeah, so we searched the place.
Right.
Look, Casey, maybe he's sewn it inside of something again.
Yes, that's probable. Yeah, look, here. There's a sewing kit on the dresser. Ah, the needle stuck in the lid. Spread it with a piece of dark blue.
Oh, that means he was sewing on something blue.
Yeah, there's nothing blue in the room.
Well, we haven't looked in the clothes closet. Maybe there's something in there that's...
And I'll open the doors.
Don't scream, young woman. And if either of you moves, I shoot.
Well, this is... quite a surprise.
It was very fortunate that I came home earlier than my usual time today.
Well, we wouldn't call it fortunate.
Back over to that wall.
What do you think you're going to do?
There's only one thing I can do to protect myself. Kill you. I have a car parked outside and I can make my getaway. And there's something I'm taking along. My winter overcoat.
Casey, it's dark blue.
There are $18,000 in bills sewn in its lining.
Charles Casimir loot.
You are quite right. And now, goodbye.
You're not going to shoot us?
Casey!
No, you don't! No. Knocked his arm up just in time.
Yeah, you've knocked him out.
I'll see that he stays out, too. Annie, run down and get my camera from the car, will you?
We get exclusive pictures and a story without any deal from our pal, Logan.
So this guy was the killer of Charles Casimir as well as the murderer of that poor little Goldblatt fella, huh, Casey?
That's right, Ethelbert. The Casimir job was his first crime. He worked in Casimir's office, and he learned about the $80,000 withdrawal that his boss was making. And he got a greedy impulse.
And he never had a chance to spend a nickel of the dough he did two murders for.
Like I always say, to coin a phrase, crime does not pay.
That's right.
Well, it pays Captain Logan. He's been congratulated by the commissioner for solving the Goldblatt and Casimir job and told that he's now right in line for an inspectorship.
How did Captain Logan get the credit?
Oh, hey, he deserved it. Yeah, that guy's a swell cop. Just because a pair of newspaper stiffs like Miss Williams and I run into a little luck.
Our Mr. Casey, whom I sometimes like, Ethelbert, called Logan in to make an exclusive arrest of the killer.
What do you and Casey get out of the deal?
An exclusive story. Plus pictures.
Casey got a bullet hole through the sleeve of his best coat when the killer shot at him.
Well, I never liked that coat.
And I? I've got a blasted reputation with Mrs. Potter. She's found out that I'm not really Mrs. Casey.
Casey, crime photographer, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 16th of November, 1950 on CBS. And that brings to a close this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.